Hello and welcome to another episode of Viper's Voices, the podcast of the Desert Vipers, a side that plays in the UAE's own 2020 cricket league, the DP World ILT20. And it's time to look forward to the next match on the Vipers' schedule, the match against the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders at the Zayed Cricket Stadium in Abu Dhabi on Saturday afternoon, the 27th of January. And to do that, we're in the company of head coach James Foster. We chatted with James on Thursday, and in a wide-ranging chat, he not only looked ahead to the match against the Knight Riders, a repeat of the side's opening game of the season, but also back to the victory over the Gulf Giants and plenty more besides. James talks about the impact of the arrival of the Pakistan players, Shaheen Shah Afridi, Shadab Khan and Azam Khan on the squad, the role of the toss in the tournament, and the impact of the Super Sub rule. There's plenty of meat on the bone there, and it's an interview you won't want to miss. But before we dive into that, remember you can buy your tickets for all Vipers matches, starting with that match against the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders, at the ILT20 website and also at all Virgin Megastores across the UAE. Now, let's hear from James. James Foster, head coach of the Desert Vipers. Let's look back to the game that the Vipers won against the Gulf Giants, and let's look forward then to match three against the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders. First of all, looking back to the game against the Gulf Giants, how important psychologically was it to win that game, given that the Giants had beaten the Vipers three times out of four in season one?
Doesn't really faze me too much, to be honest. I think that obviously that sort of record was based on last season, and we've sort of moved on to this season now. I was just really pleased with the way we went about our business yesterday. I can also be pleased with how we perform, and it doesn't mean we will necessarily always win, but I thought we did a lot of things really well yesterday. In particular, the energy in the field was a huge difference to the last game, and that was one big thing that we really wanted to make sure we brought to our performance yesterday.
Coach, you mentioned about the energy in the field there. I guess the one Achilles heel, once again, is drop catches. It was a problem last season. A couple of catches went down against the Gulf Giants. Is that something that can be easily addressed, or is it an individual thing? What do you put it down to?
Look, it's it happens in the game, you know. It's all teams sort of have those moments. We've been working very hard in our fielding. Sometimes the execution part, I mean, look, you want the execution part to be absolutely spot on, but that's not always going to be the case. For me, the real success was the energy and the movement off the ball. Intensity for those 20 overs was a huge difference to the first game, and something which I'm very proud of the team in responding to how we operated in that first game.
Energy, intensity. How much do you put that down to the arrival of those three Pakistan players? Because they certainly brought a real vibrancy to the dressing room for Game 2, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they did. I mean, they bring a lot of energy also based on their ability, and you get very excited by that. But it's important that the group then just doesn't sit back and just expect it to happen. I thought they were all outstanding in the field. I thought Azam kept beautifully well, really well kept beautifully. Shadab was his electric self, and I was really impressed with Shaheen as well in the field. I mean, it's the first time I've worked with Shaheen and really sort of observe him in the field, and he was fantastic. And it's, I mean, they brought their part to yesterday, but it was also, I thought everyone else brought their part as well. So that I was really impressed with the 20 overs in terms of, as I mentioned before, that energy and movement off the ball.
Talk to us about Shaheen. He's a world-class player. He plays all three formats. He got a wicket in his second over, 3 for 22 on Viper's debut. You couldn't have asked for any more, could you?
No. He's a world-class performer. I mean, it's an absolute joy to have him within our setup. Personally, I've not worked with him before, so we've only sort of been messaging over the last few months. Saw him during the World Cup very briefly. But just to watch him operate yesterday was pretty special.
And Azam, you mentioned his glove work there. I know Colin was talking to us on Viper's Voices about people look at him and think, well, he's a big lad, he's not going to be able to move very well. But he's got great hands, hasn't he? And his agility was there for all to see, keeping particularly to Shaheen yesterday. And on top of that, how good was he up at the stumps too?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Azam keep for quite a few years in the PSL. You know, he's a proper keeper. And as Munna said, he's very agile behind the sticks. In particular, there was that one take he took when the ball swung after it passed and he went in right into the centre of his right hand. And also the way he tied his up around the stumps, the way he was keeping to Shadab. Yes, you know Shadab very well, but also keeping to Hasaranga. It kept beautifully and very difficult chance. The one that went up in the air. Also that one where Hetmeyer sort of knocked it down and it sort of then bounced around. He was able to have the awareness and the reactions to take that. You know, he's a proper keeper. He's a proper batsman, and he's just a proper player, and he's fitting into the group so easily. He's such a great guy.
You mentioned about the fact that he's a proper batter. He came in at number five against the Gulf Giants, and you had to rejig the order, didn't you? Because obviously Dan Lawrence has gone to India now, so Adam Hose moved up to three. And then you put Wanindu Hasaranga in at four, which I guess may have raised a few eyebrows, given you had Azam and also Shafane Rutherford. But it worked beautifully, didn't it? Because he turned the whole game on its head.
Look, I mean, I think Hass is an incredibly underrated batsman. Whenever he comes in, he's got his way, his style, but he's incredibly proactive and he's always taking the game forward. He's got great touch against the spin. Often you might find during the course, his tournaments, spin will have a real impact. But also his ability against the seam, the way he hits the ball in his areas. So he's a very impactful batsman. And also if you look at his stats, in particular in those first 10 overs, they're actually off the chart. So for me, it was a no-brainer with you look at the information that you get, you look at what you see with how he operates and how he plays. So for me, it was an easy option.
Talk to us as well about maybe a feeling of redemption from his perspective, because I think he beat himself up a little bit over what happened on Sunday after the wicket of Adam Hose. All of a sudden, next ball, he gets out. And then suddenly you've got two players who haven't faced a ball yet at the crease. The game turned around with Sunil Narine bowling. Do you think that was on his mind at all?
That's a question you're going to have to ask Hass. I was just delighted the way how he bowled and batted yesterday. You know, as we know, he's a world-class performer. He always impacts matches. And also, don't forget about his fielding. If you think last season's amount of run-outs, he did direct hits. It was a quality performer. We're very lucky to have Hass. And it was a real joy to watch Hass and Shadab bowl in tandem. Two world-class bowlers, leg spinners, two wonderful fielders, two wonderful batters. You know, it's honestly, that sort of art, it's such a difficult art. And then when you've got two of them in your side, it's, you know, you just plug them in and let them do their thing.
Talk to us as well about Adam Hose. We've mentioned already you pushed him up the order because of the absence of Dan Lawrence. He had to play a little bit of an uncharacteristic innings. The ball was still darting around a little bit, but he stuck in there, didn't he? And in the end, that contribution of 39 off 35 balls in T20 terms, someone might say, well, that's no great shakes, just batting over a run a ball. But it was such an important contribution with the players playing shots at the other end, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're spot on. Look, I'm such a big fan of Hosey. I think he can basically enter the lineup at any stage. He's got, literally, if you look at his numbers, he's got great numbers all the way through all phases of the game. So very confident with Hosey batting three. As I said, great numbers at three and at four coming in the power play. I thought, yeah, you're right. He played a slightly different role. If you contrast his role, the way he played yesterday than on our first game, but the beauty was he played the situation nicely. He still has intent. Yes, it wasn't scoring at the rate, but sometimes if you look back at his innings, sometimes he's played some beautiful shots and it's just hit the fielder. Where easily they could have gone for four, but you understand then the partnership that he's working with. You know, Haas comes in, is very proactive, scores very quickly. He doesn't have to go above and beyond if it's not required. I think if you look at the pitch, it was actually very difficult. It was tricky to bat in with that new ball in the power play. If you look at both innings, it wasn't easy. The way Hosie absorbed, then he scored, got a few boundaries towards the end. Now, he played his role. He assessed what was required. He did a wonderful job.
You mentioned the pitches there. I'll ask you about them because they've been two different pitches that have been played on so far by the Vipers. For the first game against the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders, the pitch was a little bit slow. The ball gripped a little bit in the surface. In the second game against the Gulf Giants, there was more grass on the surface, perhaps a little bit more pace. I know the curator was keen to get that in. What are your feelings about pitches for T20s? Because so many people say, well, it's a batsman's game and it should just be about, you know, fours and sixes. But are you one of those people who agrees with that? Or do you prefer a game where there's a little bit more of a balance, something in it for the bowlers as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's in a challenge for batters and bowlers, isn't it? It's, I mean, one thing we always discuss on within our group, and I'm a big believer, and you always want to play what's in front of you. And yes, you know, sometimes you will see around the world pitches can be similar, but it's when they vary, it's a slightly different skill set, and you need to assess and understand what are going to be your strong options on that day. And often you find with bat and ball, the team that assess quickly and are proactive in that can get ahead of the game.
Just talk to us as well about the fact that obviously the toss was important against the Gulf Giants. And what that means now is out of the first seven games that have been played, five have been won by the side batting second. Is it turning into a situation of win the toss, have a bowl, win the match?
I don't think so. I mean, look, you generally find a lot of teams do enjoy chasing. You know, a lot of teams are stacked with a lot of batting. And then you get to see how it works, how it operates, the pitch, and bat accordingly. But no, that's not the case for me. Sometimes there will be a slight advantage, in particular with the dew factor. If you're bowling second with a dewy ball, it's always more challenging for the spinners. But you sometimes see in the competitions that kind of role changing in terms of, at the moment, you said the team batting second have won five out of seven. Sometimes you see in a competition, then suddenly that flips. So pitches can get more tired as the more they're played on. So you just, again, just have to assess and play what's in front of you.
And of course, another factor in those statistics, I guess, is the impact of the super sub, because invariably sides who are batting second will have the extra batter that they'll utilise. What have your impressions of the super sub rule been so far? Are you a fan of it?
It makes it very interesting. It means if you have a slightly imbalanced 11, you can get that balance. So you might already have like a pre... You have the option of having like a pre-plan, or you have the option of potentially assessing what's happening in the game at the time, whether if you want to plug in the extra bowl or extra seamer. So it keeps you on your toes as a coaching group and as a captain. But sometimes, look, it's I personally really enjoy just being 11v11. But you then roll with, you know, with a lot of the tournaments now, it's the super sub is in, so you've got to work with it and understand who in that moment for your team against that opposition is likely to be the right person to come in.
It seems to have been quite formulaic, actually, or become so, because invariably both teams are making their changes at the halfway stage, and the side that's bowled first brings in a batter, the side that's batted first brings in a bowler. So in that sense, it's not creating too much difference, is it?
Yeah, but then, I mean, I think we saw... ADKR played the other day, and I think they were six down for not a lot quite early. So I think they subbed out a batter and brought in an extra batter. So in that instance, that's where you've got to be thinking on your feet, and therefore you might be one less bowler in your lineup. But then if you've got that balance, if you've got those options in your bowling lineup initially, so when you're at that 11 that are already submitted, then you can afford to do that.
Let's talk about the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders, because obviously they were the team that beat you in the opening game, and then they suffered that crushing loss against MI Emirates in their second outing. What have you made of them so far?
I thought they were impressive against us the other day. I think they've got a very good roster. And I thought they played very well against us. I would say we weren't at our best in that first game. For us, obviously, we play two games in Dubai. We're now going to play in Abu Dhabi, so it's different conditions. And then we're going to have to work out what's the right thing to do on the day.
What can you do, do you think, to turn things around after what happened against them last time? You're on their own patch. I know Sunil Narine is a big fan of playing down there as well. He had a big impact in the game in Dubai. What do you need to do better, and what do you need to do to restrict them in order to come away with those 2 points?
I thought the way we played yesterday has put us in a really good stead for when we play them in a couple of days' time. It was just getting a little bit of more of our energy and intensity around our group in the field, which I think had a really good positive knock-on effect. When we play any team, it's all on the day. You know, it's what's gone has been gone. You can learn, bearing in mind we only played them 4 days ago, whatever it was. You can use that information. You can gather that information and tactically look to maybe do things slightly differently. It's probably not for me to say on here what we might do.
And it's the start of a very intense period. 6 games in, I think it's 9 days. Just talk to us about how you as a coaching group are going to manage the players through that really heavy period of work.
Well, like you say, I mean, that's quite an unusually tough period of time for the amount of games in such a short space of time. There might be a little bit of pre-planning in there, but it's also just assessing and being smart after each game, seeing where the group are at, seeing what the fatigue levels are like. There's a fair bit of travel going on. Obviously, we're going up to Abu Dhabi, and then the next day we're playing at Sharjah, so there's a lot of travel. You have to be smart, and it's, you know, there's every chance there's going to be a little bit of rotation in there, but it's working out who are the right people to come in, come out, and against which team on which conditions and what likely the conditions might play like.
And you talk about rotation there. Obviously, for the game against the Gulf Giants, there were 4 changes from the side from the first game. The 3 Pakistani lads who arrived, they were 3 of those changes. But I guess on the flip side of that, it means that you as a coaching staff are having to manage players who are missing out, who want to be playing in these games. How do you go about doing that?
I mean, you try to stay in contact with the players the whole time. You know, you don't want to be all over them, but just checking in on them, seeing how they're going. Look, we still have training going on, but during this period, you generally find the amount of training will come down quite a lot because it literally isn't the time. So then it's just making sure that you're in touch with them, what their chances and possibility of playing in the next game or the game after, so they're ready. We can have some little top-up sessions along the way. But, you know, a lot of it is about being physically, mentally fresh and mentally right. And sometimes it's not about what you do in your training or the volume of training. It's about where you are mentally and getting the preparation right up here, which I believe is going to give you the best chance of success. You know, you've got a lot of high-quality, world-class players. It's not about hitting a few little half volleys or bowling a few coming out of the hand. It's about when they get their opportunity, that they're mentally ready to give themselves the best chance of performing if and when they get that opportunity.
And how about managing a team mentally? Because obviously the defeat in the first game was a frustrating one, I think, for all the players and staff. On the other side of the coin, the victory in game 2 was a really joyous occasion, getting off the mark, winning with those 3 Pakistani lads coming into the side. How do you create that happy balance between getting too low or getting too high?
Well, you want to stay as level as you possibly can as a coaching management group, and also you want that to drip into your playing group. Not a big believer in suddenly buzzing and throwing around with tons of energy if you've had a win. And then the flip side, if you lose, doom and gloom, you know, there's no contact with me and players. I'm a miserable so-and-so. You know, we've got a world-class coaching group. The guys around me are very consistent. They know what they're doing, and they believe along those lines as well. So it's just about, you know, in this format, you're going to be winning games. You're also going to be losing games. There'll be some tight, you know, it's a fine line between success and failure in this game. Just one little moment can suddenly swing it. It could be a decision. It could be a review, or it could be someone coming in with a world-class bowling sort of spell or over or a couple of balls that suddenly change the game. Same with the bat. Someone has the ability to suddenly carve the ball in certain areas, a couple of boundaries, just changes it either way. So you want to be as consistent as you possibly can, I believe. And I believe that consistency will be advantageous within the group and the advantage and within the environment, sorry.
I've got to ask you as well about Sunil Narine coming up against him again. He was very, very impressive in that opening game. How'd you counter him?
Look, I actually thought we played him really well. It's probably that last over, which hurt us a little bit. But that happens, you know. He's a world-class performer. He's allowed to do that. So, you know, it's the same that they'll be looking at our bowling attack and they'll be looking at, my God, they've got X, Y, and Z. So it's all about on the day, what are your plans as a group, but ultimately individually, you've got to be very clear how you're going to go about your business against these world-class players. Sometimes you have to absorb. Sometimes if you see the opportunity, then you can go on the attack. So that's something which we should talk about, not just about Sunny, but all the bowling attacks that we come up against in this competition.
And just 7 games into the tournament at the time of us chatting here, and every team has tasted defeat. Is that an indication that after last season, where the Gulf Giants and Desert Vipers were a distance ahead of the other teams, has everyone come back to the field, or has there been an improvement in quality overall? What are your impressions of that statistic?
Well, I wouldn't read too much into it right now, but I would say looking at all the rosters, everyone's got really good squads. I think everyone's strengthened. I know we've strengthened. So it's going to be some great cricket on show in the ILT20 this season. You've got world-class players matching up against each other. Sometimes you have to fight fire with fire, which is going to make it a very, very entertaining tournament.
James Foster, the Desert Vipers head coach, on the challenges ahead for his side, starting with the clash against the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders on Saturday, the 27th of January. And that's all for another episode of Vipers Voices. Tickets for that match against the Abu Dhabi Knight Riders at the Zayed Cricket Stadium in Abu Dhabi on the 27th of January and every other game the Vipers are playing are available via the ILT20 website and also at all Virgin Megastores throughout the UAE. We'll be back with reaction to that Knight Riders match here on Vipers Voices in both podcast and vodcast form. You can watch the vodcast on the website, that's thedesertvipers.com, and the Vipers YouTube channel. And you can also stay in touch with all things Desert Vipers via all the major social media channels. For the time being then, this is Brian Murgatroyd saying, as ever, thanks so much for listening.